What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, Mike's got a flight to catch, so this episode might be faster than a Viggo Mortensen quickie. We'll do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me, the aforementioned Mike Duranik, and of course, Brad Miller with us as well. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Well, Mike's going to have a short night of sleep ahead of him, and I had a short night of sleep last night, so this could be a very interesting episode. So, I'm going to say I'm doing good, but I'm not 100% sure that I am.
I mean, with a cold open like that, how can I be doing anything other than great, Ethan? You know, you managed to wrap the real world in to the movie that we're talking about flawlessly. And so, yeah, excited to talk this movie with you guys before I catch a couple of hours of sleep and hop on a flight.
I always try to do my best to impress you two gentlemen with the cold opens. And even I was proud of that one. This week, we are talking A History of Violence. Mike's pick for the month of September came out in 2005. Viggo Mortensen, Maria Bello, Ed Harris, William Hurt for not much screen time, but still got himself on the poster there. A crime thriller drama, again, kind of one of these ones that just kind of floats in and out of different genres and not really sure what to call it, but we're going to talk all about it. Guys, I say we hop into it with the first question I always ask, and that is, what was your first experience with A History of Violence? Mike, with it being your pick, I'm sure that you do have a history with it, no pun intended. Brad, not sure, maybe this was your first time seeing it, and if it was, did you know anything about it? What do you guys got?
So, interesting answer for that. I thought this was my first time seeing it. So clearly it was not memorable when I did watch it before. However, about 20 minutes into it, I was like, oh, yep, seen this before. And then obviously when it gets to some of those, we'll call them cringy scenes later in the movie, it's like, oh, yeah, I saw this one before. So because there are certain ones that just get etched in your brain. So I'm guessing that it was probably a Blockbuster rental, but this also, depending on the timeline, and I think it's accurate, was probably right in that wheelhouse of when Netflix mailed you the DVDs. And that might be where I saw it. So one of those two, because I did frequent the Blockbuster and I did enjoy the Netflix mail-in DVDs. So I'm going to say it was one of those two. But honestly, had no recollection of seeing it and had no idea other than Viggo Mortensen what to expect from this film.
So I had seen this. I had seen it once. I cold bought the DVD, I believe probably from Blockbuster would be my guess, right? Used. And hadn't seen it, didn't know anything about it. As we know and have established on this podcast, I'm a fairly substantial Lord of the Rings fan. And so I think I was just excited to see Viggo in something else. And so bought it and watched it. And definitely did not remember all of the scenes in this. I remembered the main plot through, as we'll talk about. And haven't watched it in what I would imagine it was released in 2005. I probably bought it in 2006. So I probably haven't seen it in 16 years before this rewatch.
I had a decently similar experience as Mike. Only difference being, as I told you guys earlier, I was 13 when I had this experience. But cold buy, I used to go, like when I'd get allowance or whatever, it was in the summer. We lived close or within like bike riding distance of some like stores in town or whatever. I'd go in and check the $5, the dollar bins, and I loved movies. I loved watching movies. I recognized Viggo Mortensen because of Lord of the Rings, like you, and also as a kid, really loved the movie Hidalgo. My parents took me to saw it. So he was someone, you know, gravitated to seeing him on the front of the box, bought it. Not sure how I didn't get carded as a 13-year-old buying this movie, but that was an egregious miss on the workers at Walmart that day. watched it and remembered being, I think as a 13-year-old being bored for portions of it, because there's the big moments and then it kind of falls off and goes, but like not really understanding what I was watching and just kind of put it away. Hadn't seen it since. So like you, forgot much of the biggest moments of this, kind of knew the through line. So I was definitely in for some surprises when I hit play.
Were you or were you not surprised by Maria Bello's bush?
Can you see it in this?
Yeah, I very much saw her bush in this and was like, oh, wow, because you don't see that in movies too much these days. So yeah. I was caught off guard because I forgot that was there.
I guess I didn't notice it. So, yes, like the answer is no, I was not surprised because I didn't.
She walked out of the bathroom full frontal.
Oh.
I don't know how you missed that, but.
I guess I was, I don't know, maybe I was looking down texting or something. I'm not sure.
Ethan's an artor, and so he yeah. he was paying attention to the lighting in the scene,
yes. Brad,
the general ambiance.
I mean, I was also watching the lighting in the scene. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, there's some wild moments in this movie that we'll get into. I don't want to get too much into them before we play the game that we play so that we can lead into that. And it is the Rotten Tomatoes game. I am somehow, I've won two of these in a row, and I think I'm playing against Brad, because I think we had Mike try to snipe me on This Is Where I Leave You, and we ended up finding out that that movie was considered rotten. Rotten Tomatoes is having a rough stretch here, so we'll see if they can kind of redeem themselves with this movie. So I will go first. This is really tough. This movie is definitely made in the early 2000s. I can tell you that. What's holding me up is I know that William Hurt did get nominated. So this is an Academy Award nominated film. I know, but if you guys can't see the look on Brad's face, he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for the literal 10 minutes he was on screen. I know.
What?
So someone, this hit well with someone.
What?
So I think it's got to be fresh. I'm going to go 85. I'm going to put it not, you know, up in the crazy territory where the movie got nominated, but I'm going to go 85 and let Brad try to kind of work around me there. But that's where I'm going to throw it at. Brad, what are you going to go with?
Nominated?
He did. Yes, he did.
I mean, I understand if you nominate, you know, Ed Harris or, you know, I guess other than him, I don't know who else in this could get nominated as far as that, but I wouldn't have given it to anybody in this film, and we can get into that later. But I'm going to use that as a hint, I guess, and guess that this was probably critiqued higher than I might critique it. So I'm going to take the slim road here, and I'm going to go 86 to snipe you and hope that the critics liked it as much as they apparently liked William Hurt in this movie.
Well, the critics liked it. I don't know that they liked it as much as Viggo Mortensen himself, who praised it as the quote, perfect film noir or close to perfect. You know, that's some pretty good praise for yourself there. Not very humble in the long run. Critics had it at an 87. So Brad wins. You guys were both very close.
87. Ooh. Okay. After I gave my guess, Brad, I did pull up just to confirm that what I said was correct. And he was. But not only that, this movie also got a nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay. This was pulled from a graphic novel that came out a few years earlier. So this did get two Oscar nominations. Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor. As we talk, I'm curious to see kind of what the competition was that year. Because no matter what, 10 minutes of screen time, wherever we all end up being, that's very, very little.
I would love to know. I mean, clearly you said he didn't win, but like what they saw in those 10 minutes that would say this deserves a nomination. There was nothing special in that. I mean, I suppose he had a couple, you know, decent mobster mannerisms and talk and things like that. But I mean, I've seen many, 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 many more better supporting actor performances than that. So I don't know. That's an interesting choice.
Your competition this year, it was kind of a murderer's row, so to speak. The other nominees who did not win alongside William Hurt, Jake Gyllenhaal for Brokeback Mountain, Paul Giamatti in Cinderella Man, Matt Dillon in Crash, and then your winner that year was George Clooney in Syriana. So not necessarily the greatest movies across the board, but certainly some heavy hitters there in terms of who was nominated across the board.
Well, I'll tell you this. His 10 minutes were better than anything Matt Dillon did in Crash. So if we're just going based on the other nominees from that year as a benchmark of what should be nominated for something, he at least beat out one of his fellow nominees, which also tells me that this is the year, of course, that Crash somehow won ahead of plenty of other much more worthy films. So
when you say Matt Dillon, there's two things that always come to mind first for me: the big teeth and Something About Mary. And then the line in Something About Mary where he walks in and he orders a whiskey sour, because I never knew what that drink was when that movie came out because I was too young to drink. But I remember one of the times in the bar, as a shout out to him, I wanted to order a whiskey sour just to know what it was he ordered in that movie. So that's Matt Dillon's place in my head. So yeah, there's nothing about Crash that takes up space in my brain for him. So I guess I kind of agree with you there.
Yeah, and that was the year, as you pointed out, Crash won best picture, went up against Brokeback Mountain, Capote, Good Night and Good Luck, and then my favorite of the five nominees, which was Munich.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed. So back into History of Violence, let me ask you guys this other question that I ask every week. Is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Have they redeemed themselves from the egregious miss saying that This Is Where I Leave You was a rotten film? And I'm curious where you guys go with this one. And I believe the fan score, I'll pull it up here. Something tells me the fan score is probably not up that high. I'll pull it up as you guys talk, because this movie made no money. $30 million budget, made $60 million.
I would have to say that I don't think Rotten Tomatoes is right. I would probably, for myself, put this in the mid-70s or so. I think that based on the actors that are in it and based on the storyline, like it's a good film. But my biggest critique of the whole thing is I think they were drastically overacting in this. I don't know, the facial expressions, the mannerisms, the some of the emotion just didn't match the moment. I think especially Maria Bello was overacting. I think that Viggo did at times. I wasn't a big fan of Ashton Holmes in his role as Jack. I don't know, like, as far as the quality of actors they had in this thing, I don't think it was acted very well. Ed Harris didn't really Ed Harris the moment for me either. So I think overall I enjoyed the movie. I ranked it just below the midway point in our rankings, probably somewhere around 50. But enjoyable. Probably won't ever watch it again. I guess I wish that some of the level they took some of the moments to matched what was happening in the scene. Just a lot of overacting. I'm curious to see what you guys have to say about that.
Well, I mean, for me, I think that they're pretty much spot on. If I had been playing the game, 85 was where I was going to go with my guess. I think it's a solid B film, if you think of it that way. When you compare it with some of the other films that were nominated for Best Picture, I honestly think you could make an argument that this was better than some of those. And so maybe it was just a weaker year for films. But I think that it punched in the in that weight class for this year. I don't know that I saw the overacting that you did, Brad. I'm you know, curious as always to hear a little more of your thoughts on that. But I really enjoyed the performances by Vigo, by Ed Harris. You know, William Hurt was fine for the very brief part that he was in there. But at the same time, I like Vigo, but I also love Ed Harris. And so I'm generally right there with Ed Harris on most anything that he's in, and tend to enjoy his performances quite a bit.
Yeah, for me, I think, I mean, 87, you're trending up, you know, close to 90 and saying, you know, this is something really, really, truly special. So I'm probably a little bit lower. The fan score is a 76, Brad, so it seems like the audience score is right where you would have it. I mean, I would just have it more as like a B minus, you know, somewhere in that 80 to 83 range. I think what it does really well, and at the beginning of the movie, I did agree as like, good Lord, what are these people doing reading these lines this way? But at least as it went on, and when I did realize it was a graphic novel adaptation, it started to feel like I was kind of seeing a comic book with the violence. Like when it happens, every time a violent scene happens in this movie, it is shocking and horrifying. Like it almost takes you out of it, but I think that's the point. And I think with some of Vigo's acting, I think the point is he's this guy that's invented this life that he's not really comfortable in. Because even by the end of it, like when his brother asks him, do you like being married? It's not this definitive, like, yes, of course, like I am this person. It is kind of this, like, I don't know, almost the way it comes across is like he didn't really know what else to do, so he did this because maybe he didn't want to be a killer anymore, but that's still who he is. Like, the more the movie went on, I was okay with how Vigo was playing it because it felt to me more like a choice and less like bad acting. I've never been a fan of Maria Bello ever. She's just never really done it for me. There's a couple times she did it for Vigo in this movie. But you know that, so I think it was just meant to be a very R-rated at times graphic movie based on a graphic novel. And I think with what they were trying to do, they hit the mark, and I was very locked in because I forgot how it ended. And I really wanted to know how we were going to get from point A to point B, and for an hour and a half, 2005 thriller, that's right up my alley.
Yeah, I think, Mike, you asked about some of the overacting. One of the scenes that really stood out to me was the hospital scene where she starts vomiting. And
a bad vomit.
Real like, bad vomit. Just screaming at him. Like, I guess when you marry somebody that you meet later in life, like, you're always open to the idea of whatever they've told you about their past could be a lie. You just never know. She said we didn't get to be high schoolers together. Like, so that implies like, hey, we met later in life. And in some ways, like I know it is seems backwards, but like if he had this bad life and he needed to get away from it, he's actually protecting her by not talking about it. And the fact that he chose her and he chose that life and he chose those kids and like he's choosing to stay with them, in some ways it's more complimentary than it is the way she's taking it. And the fact that it's like, well, you've lied to me. Well, in some ways, yes. But in some ways, like it's justified because he said, I spent 3 years killing this person. I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be who I was and how I was raised. And I got out of that and I chose this life and I choose you. And I could see some of the anger and the frustration as far as like, can you really buy that love? Can you really understand? Like, is this fake? Is this some sort of front for that? But like the overreaction in that, and then it just lingered from there. To the point of like, you know, they could have easily just gotten divorced from it. And I think that was one that stood out. There were a couple others, just the way, even when Vigo was running in pain. And believe me, if there's anyone that can understand running in pain, that's me. and I'm watching his face through some of that, and it's just like, okay, this doesn't match. And some of the reactions in the house while they're waiting for those guys to show up, you know, like there was time after time after time where I just felt like, okay, this scene was overacted. Even the interaction between the brothers, you know, it was just very dramatic when it really didn't have to be. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's nitpicky. I know for me, Maria Bello really stood out there, but because she stood out so much, her and the son, Jack, both to me, really cranked it up to 11 when they didn't need to. And I think that magnified the other performances to a point where I started noticing it with them. But I mean, overall decent film. I think that's just my biggest critique is the overreaction. Where would you guys be if you found out that, you know, somebody that you really cared about, whether that's a spouse or whether that's a relative or a girlfriend or whatever, and you found out that, you know, anything before you came into their life was you didn't know about, even if it was criminal activity, like, where do you think you fall on that spectrum of Maria Bello to, I don't know, someone in a coma being the two ends of the spectrum?
Well, I think you lay out some good points there about the overacting and I felt like they did play the characters to the extremes. And I guess I did just kind of see it more through the lens of it was a graphic novel. So they're playing the characters to the extreme to be more consistent with that. But I think it's a fair critique, Brad. So thanks for sharing that. As far as your question about on the coma to Bello scale, for if I found out that, you know, Jenny had once been, you know, a person who was killing people for the mob, I think I'd be more like, you know, it actually makes a lot of sense. It explains a lot of things that didn't make sense before. So, you know, probably tough but fair. But no, I mean, I do think to your point, like, it would be a gut punch, of course. And you wonder, like, were you ever going to tell me? Why was I not worthy of you telling me? But then, like, my mind immediately goes to, like, well, if, you know, at what point was he supposed to tell her? Mm-hmm. On the first date? After a month? Right. When he proposed? When they had their first child? And, you know, I think it kind of goes to the broader sense that everyone has skeletons in their closet. Most people, as far as we know, and certainly as we hope, don't have the skeletons that Viggo has in his closet in this movie. But, you know, the only person who knows the 100% true you is probably you. And then there are select people in your lives who know more of you than other people. And so, yeah, I think from that standpoint, I don't think I would be, you know, pathetic vomiting in the bathroom. But who knows? I mean, you never know, because I can't imagine that would be a literal gut punch that would make you
want to rush. Well, I think to me that reaction would be like if she found out, like if she knew her father or somebody had been killed by some mobster in Philadelphia, and then she realizes, like, could she have married the man that killed her father? Okay, now you're puking all over the bathroom because, you know, you've got this connection here. Like, in some ways, like, and maybe he had a lot of underacting in that hospital bed. He's just kind of laying there and letting her react, and he kind of just shrugs his shoulders when she walks out, and kind of like, well, there goes that. And it's like, I would be saying, I did this to protect you. Our kids can't know this. Maybe I could have alluded to the fact that, hey, I have a violent past, but you don't want to know those details because it's going to affect how you look at me. And, you know, maybe a conversation like that. But in a lot of ways, I kind of took his side of, like, he left that, he killed it, he clearly had no intention of ever going back to it. He was going to live out his life as Tom Stahl and run this diner. And so it's like, well, this was forced on him. This was never going to be a thing that she knew about or the family knew about, other than these two guys just happened to walk into that diner and cause this scene. So I guess I don't see outside of it affecting her previously before they got married, why the reaction. Now, obviously, you have to have it for the movie, but in real life, I've been delivered similar, news in different ways, not about a marriage, but about what's the word I'm looking for? Lineage, DNA, you know, just different family members that drop some bombshells on me along the way. And I get it. Like, you're kind of stunned and you're trying to figure out what this means for you and your history and your future. But like, yeah, this is a much longer conversation about Maria Bella's acting than we need to have, because I don't think any of us are saying that she really ever wins the day. But yeah, I think that's my biggest issue with this film. But overall, enjoyable.
I think where this movie ends up winning out for me, the questions that I think it's asking that really kind of put it over the top of other movies that are kind of similar to this, and probably why it ended up getting nominated for writing, is it's very interesting how it sets the tone for the violence while asking questions around it. Like, that opening scene is horrifying, the way they introduce these two guys. So you're instantly terrified of them and the violence that they can inflict on people that we see as obviously unjust. And then when they come into the diner, how quickly Viggo Mortensen can inflict violence on someone, but we see it as just, right? Because he's defending people. But then how that transitions into his son. I mean, his son lights those guys up, those two bullies. But seemingly, he's been introduced as this kind of nerdy, uncoordinated, you wouldn't expect him to have the ability to do that. Yet when pushed to his limit, all of a sudden he can just snap and destroy two guys that are bigger than him. So is it in some way hereditary? You know, is it in his DNA? Is it just ingrained in his nature to be able to inflict pain on people because of who his father is, like that? Like, and their relationship too between Maria Bello and Viggo Mortensen. Like, she clearly, while she is throwing up when she finds out about it, she's clearly a little into it, right? Like, you kind of get the vibe at the beginning that they're bored of their life, that, you know, she's trying to spice things up, you know, they're just kind of living this boring life, and she's all about it when he kills those two guys in the diner. She wants him to be painted as this hero. That's her knight in shining armor. Her husband just fucked some dudes up that wanted to mess with him. And then, as like weird and cringy as that last sex scene is, he's about to walk away. Like, he gets to a moment where he's like, good God, like, I'm attacking, I need to stop. And he's about to, like, he's getting up and she grabs him and pulls him back in. So there's the dynamics that they're diving into in that relationship is, I think, the most interesting part of this movie, just for it being a 90-minute 2005 action thriller. And she doesn't have to be a good or bad actress for them to ask those questions and for them to come across the screen, in my opinion. She doesn't help it, but the writing is still there and the story is still there.
I think that I definitely agree with the beginning part in the diner. But of course, like, if you know that's your life and you know that's your livelihood, yeah, I mean, you want to be with somebody that you know can protect you. I think there are a lot more psychological dynamics to her reaction later in that what you called cringy sex scene than just the fact that she was into him. But I mean, if this was a 90-minute film, it probably should have been 85, because that 5 minutes they spent on that cheerleader scene, really didn't play a whole part in that. It was just kind of weird and awkward and drug out a little bit. And yeah, not really sure why that was in there, but I mean, again, if you're removing one scene, you know, that I'd say that's pretty good. I don't know that I enjoyed the fact that they just, you know, had that toupee fly off when the guy got shot in the head. I think that was a bit corny for what they were going for as a film, but yeah, overall, just a couple little things that I would change there.
All right. Well, we don't need to keep talking about Maria Bello, and this is obviously not Ed Harris's peak. It's been a while since we've talked to Viggo Mortensen. I don't know where you guys, Mike, I know that you'll still have this as, or you'll still have Lord of the Rings, of course, as his peak. But where do you guys fall on Viggo Mortensen? I'm a fan of this early work. He's kind of been on a run of stuff that I haven't watched much of. His most recent one that's on Amazon Prime, I did enjoy. But where are you guys at for Viggo Mortensen?
Outside of Lord of the Rings, I don't have a lot of history with him. Looking back through his IMDb, I think I've seen a handful of the movies, but I don't know how many of them outside of Aragorn, like, I would really say was memorable to me. So clearly that's his peak. Like I said, I think he does fine in this, other than a few moments. So I like him, but he's kind of one of those, like, if I never see him in a film again, I'm okay. Or if he's in the film, cool, let's do it. Just kind of indifferent to him, I would say.
Yeah, I think he's a solid solid bit actor, right? A solid character actor who can add a lot to any movie that he's in. I think that he's stretched as a leading man. This is, in from as I kind of look at his filmography, I would say this is his best performance as a leading man. His best performance is Aragorn, but he was a part of a huge ensemble for that. And so I think he is well casted as a part of an ensemble, or as a third or fourth male lead, so to speak, down the ticket. And again, that, there's nothing wrong with that. I think he's extremely capable, an extremely capable actor. And I do tend to enjoy him when I see him pop up in things.
Have you seen Eastern Promises, Mike?
I have. It has been a long time, and I couldn't tell you much about it other than I'm also sure, pretty sure I own it, and it was a similar situation to buying this one.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to pick, like you said, best leading performance, I'd probably go there. But it is also a movie that I'll never watch again because I don't need to see his penis. But Maria Bello did, so congrats to her. And I'm still hurting a little bit inside, at least my 10-year-old self, is that no one's giving love to Hidalgo. I think that's a fun movie.
Not to disparage Hidalgo, Ethan. I think it's fine. I just wouldn't put it above this or any of the three Lord of the Rings.
Fair. Let's keep it rolling, guys. Favorite scene, where would you go for A History of Violence?
Somehow I always forget that we're going to ask this question. So I'm going to kind of run through my mind here of some that I enjoyed, and listen to where you guys go with it before I share.
I think for me, I enjoyed the scene with Ed Harris outside of the house leading up to the son shooting Ed Harris. And the reason for it is I did like, in this movie, there was one part that I really thought was fairly well done, right? So I remember the first time watching it going like, well, obviously this guy isn't who he says that he is. But he's still continuing to, I'm not this, I don't know. But then as Ed Harris is standing over him with the gun, and, you know, he says, like, you know, whatever he says there, any last words. And just the moment where he just lets the guard down, right? And he's just like, I should have killed you in Philly. So I appreciated that scene. I thought that it was well done. Again, the peak of this movie for me in my mind heading back into it, and then upon the rewatch, was Viggo and Ed Harris going at each other, and I thought that that scene played out particularly well.
Yeah, I think ever since the first time I saw it, the one thing that was just ingrained in my mind is him busting that guy's nose, and it was still just as, oh, God, horrendous this time around. If it's not that scene, because I probably agree with you, then the 1B, I think, is the William Hurt, the 10 minutes that we get of William Hurt. Always been a fan of his. From my childhood, if we want to go like real, real deep cut, going back to Michael with John Travolta, right? So I've seen William Hurt popping up in random things for a long time. I always enjoy it. RIP. And I think, I mean, if there's any reason he got nominated, it's because he's worked, even up to this point, had worked for decades, was loved in the business, had a couple nominations. Let's give him one. It's a weak year because for 10 minutes, he just owned it, right? Like, this isn't his movie until it absolutely is. And his reactions to all of a sudden, you know, Viggo becoming basically superhuman, being able to do what he's able to do and dodge bullets, and just the look on his face, like, how did you guys fuck this up? Like, just his reactions there, I think were great. I found it to be the most entertaining part, even if the Ed Harris scene is probably a little more well done. So I'd go with that as my 1B.
I don't know how they justify him missing like what, four times at close range like that when he's standing behind the desk in that scene.
I think that's where it leans into like, this is, they're just, it's a graphic novel. They're literally like, this is borderline like the origin story of John Wick, right? Like, this is John Wick if he was in a small town. Like, they don't sell it as a graphic novel or in that way, but you almost have to at that point kind of accept it as that because, yeah, it's ridiculous that he wouldn't have clipped him at least.
Yeah, and I think that would have added to some of the reality of it for me is like, okay, come on. Like, this guy's a mobster but doesn't know how to handle himself from a few feet away with a handgun. Anyways, I guess to answer the question, I'm going to go with Mike's as well. I think that was probably, the most entertaining scene for me. You kind of see the kill shot coming, because you know, the gun's back there and you know, the sun is still, kind of lingering around, but, where they take it with that blood splatter and then the, I don't know if it was brains or guts or whatever that was splattered on him. They took that up to another level. So I found that entertaining for sure.
Favorite line, fellas, anything that stood out?
Nothing on my end that really jumped out to me that I feel like looking back up right now.
Same for me.
Nothing profound, but the moment where I was like, oh yeah, William Hurt's in this movie, that set me back into it was when I don't remember the girl's name, but he's like, didn't you have sex with that girl in the bar? He was like, no, I never slept with her. And he just kind of shrugs and is like, you should have. Like, it was, I really did enjoy the hell out of just watching William Hurt. Like, it felt like someone called him up. He's like, hey man, come to set for a few hours. You're going to make a lot of money. You can basically say whatever you want like that. I enjoyed it, but no, nothing profound from this movie. It's not really one of those movies. I think that'll do it, guys. That will be our conversation of A History of Violence. As we wrap up the month of September, next week, we will kick off a new month, a whole new, set of options for our films. And we're going to be doing it with the Matt Damon led The Martian, I think finally eligible. Maybe it was last year. I'm not sure. 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. A more recent film than the one we've just done. But that's how we're going to start the month of October. We hope you join us. We hope you enjoyed this trip back to 2005. Brad, do you have something?
Yeah, I think it's okay to pull back the curtain a little bit and let everybody know that maybe they can look forward to some new wrinkles because this is the last time at least that we have planned right now to record separately via Zoom. And we're going to hopefully be in the same room recording. Maybe that throws in some new wrinkles. I think our personalities will play off each other a little more, maybe some more heated discussions. some more back and forth banter, but maybe we can throw even something back into the podcast, maybe, you know, from our Of Course I'm Right days, just to kind of harken back to bringing some of that personality into the podcast. So maybe some things to look forward to, and I hope you guys enjoy the results of us attempting to be in the same place at the same time.
Well, I can absolutely tell you that 4 hours straight of recording is going to increase the odds that those last couple episodes of the month, I could be half cocked. Who knows? We will see how these days go while we're recording. Who knows what could happen? But yes, Brad is right. We are changing up a little bit, and we hope everybody enjoys it. Thank you so much for supporting the show, and we hope that you continue to do that. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan. We'll see you next time.